चतुपाद की
जय।
Hare Krishna Mataji,
Hare Krishna.
Welcome to this morning's reading from Srimad Bhagavatam. Actually, His Grace Vishwamurti Prabhu was supposed to speak today, but because of time and circumstances, you know, it is not possible. So I'm standing in for him. But there are a lot of devotees on behalf of our congregation who have gone to meet him today to learn more about the Vani Piriya service that he has taken up very nicely, and which we hope that they can also learn from him, and then they can also teach us or get us more involved in this very nice service now that a lot of devotees in ISKCON are taking up all over the world actually. So that's a very important service for us to also go into, at least an opportunity to do nice service for Prabhupada. So we should hear that after they have met him also sometime.
Jai Prabhupada, Jai Prabhupada, Prabhupada, Jai Prabhupada, Jai Srila Prabhupada,
Jai Prabhupada, Jai Prabhupada, Prabhupada, Jai Prabhupada, Jai Prabhupada,
Jai Prabhupada, Jai Prabhupada, Prabhupada, Jai Prabhupada, Jai Srila Prabhupada,
Jai Prabhupada, Jai Prabhupada, Prabhupada, Jai Prabhupada,
Jai Prabhupada, 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 Jai Prabhupada,
Jai
Prabhupada, Jai Prabhupada, Jai Prabhupada, Jai Prabhupada,
Jai Prabhupada Ki Jai. So we read today from Prabhupada Nectar. Srila Prabhupada regularly gave out cookies from the Vyasa Sangha, but on a visit to New Vrindavan, he once gave out an entire meal of prasadam right off the lady's plates. That's very unusual. An entire meal of prasadam right off the lady's plates. This is in New Vrindavan. Radhanath Das, of course Radhanath Maharaj today, had a strong desire to approach Srila Prabhupada with the lady's plate immediately after offering it to Radha Vrindavan Chandra. So he rather boldly approached Srila Prabhupada on the Vyasa Sangha. At first he had been stopped by Srila Prabhupada's secretary Pushpa Krishna, who asked, "Where are the cookies?" Radhanath said, "They had none, only this poor lady ate." "Forget it," said Pushpa Krishna, "you can't give out that kind of stuff." But Radhanath managed to approach Prabhupada from a different direction. When Srila Prabhupada saw the plate, he smiled, took it up and began sampling each preparation with a spoon. He took a spoonful of sweet rice, tasted it, and then began handing out spoonfuls. Over 100 devotees were present, and they rushed forward, unlike their usual formal lines for receiving a cookie. Prabhupada went from preparation to preparation, eating a few spoonfuls of sabji, and then distributing it to the urgent, outstretched hands of the surrounding devotees. After finishing each preparation, he also gave away the silver bowl. Jai. Finally, all that was left were two large gulab jamuns. Children began to cry out, "Prabhupada, give it to me." Srila Prabhupada took his time, and at last he shook his head no. He took the gulab jamun up himself and bit into it. At the first bite, the gulab jamun juice squirted out, wetting several nearby devotees who began dancing and shouting. After after two bites, Srila Prabhupada gave out the remnants of the gulab jamun. His first bite of the second gulab jamun also produced a stream of juice, and by now the whole temple room was turned into a state of happy pandemonium. The whole episode lasted about 15 minutes, and Srila Prabhupada was obviously feeling great enjoyment, laughing and watching everyone trying to get the Mahaprasadam from his hand. Jai Srila Prabhupada ki jai. This shows us one nice point, that an acharya, according to time, place and circumstances, can act very what appears to be boldly by taking an entire meal of prasadam right off the daily's plates. But these doings are not for us to imitate. But by showing this, Prabhupada showed his mercy to the devotees. He showed that besides being an acharya who was strict, who was teaching them how to become Krishna conscious, he was also extremely loving in his affection. And actually, I think most of us can relate to the fact that it is the love of a pure devotee that actually attracts us to Krishna consciousness. And based on that loving affection that the pure devotee gives us, we then become more amenable to actually following his instructions. Though sastrically that should not be the case. We should be ready to accept Guru as he is. The Gurus are so expertly kind and genuinely kind that they are willing to display great lengths of affection so that the devotees become enthused. I am sure everyone who was there at New Vrindavan never forgot this episode. And if anything, I think this episode would have inspired them to continue with Krishna consciousness. So it shows us one thing, that Krishna consciousness is not an impersonalist philosophy. It is very sad if devotees come to Krishna consciousness and behave impersonally. In the name of gravity, in the name of being Veda, we should not forget that our first business is to serve and be loving in our dealings with devotees. In being loving with someone, it does not mean that we have lost gravity. It simply means that we are following the way of the acharyas. So this is an important but practical point that we should remember. Because the moment a congregation loses its loving dealings, then the chances for us to become very impersonalist in the way we deal with each other can also become very powerful. And if we are not careful, then as Prabhupada said, you know, we become hidden impersonalists. In one walk, he said, we can become hidden impersonalists. So we should be very careful of that. Jai Shri Prabhupada ki jai. Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari.
Yeah.
Nityam Bhagavata सेवया भगवती उत्तम श्लोके भगवती नैषिकी
In classes,
on the Bhagavatam, and by rendering of service
and
the pure devotee, all that is troublesome to the heart is almost completely destroyed. In loving service unto the personality of Godhead, which prays with transcendental song,
established
as an irrevocable fact. Jai Dhritarashtra Bhagavatam Ki
Jai.
So today we continue the discussion in the second canto, chapter 5, and I think the verse is it text 24? No, 24? It's 24, right? सोऽहंकार इति प्रोक्तो विकुर्वन् समभूत्रिधा वैकारिकस्तैजसश्च तामसश्चेति यद्विदा द्रव्यशक्तिः क्रियाशक्तिः प्रभो सोऽहंकार इति प्रोक्तो विकुर्वन् समभूत्रिधा वैकारिकस्तैजसश्च तामसश्चेति यद्विधा द्रव्यशक्तिः क्रियाशक्तिः प्रभो ओहंकार इति प्रोक्तो विकुर्वन् समभूत्रिधा वैकारिकस्तैजसश्च तमसश्चेति यद्विदा द्रव्यशक्ति क्रियाशक्ति
सोऽहंकार इति प्रोक्तो विकुर्वन् समभूत्रिधा वैकारिकस्तैजसश्च तमसश्चेति यद्विदा द्रव्यशक्तिः क्रियाशक्तिर् ज्ञानशक्तिर् इति प्रभो सोऽहंकार इति
ज्ञानशक्तिर्भूत्रिका the very same thing. Ahankara, ego, iti, thus, sroktaha, says, rikurvat, being transformed, samabhut, became manifested, vidha, in three teachers, vaikarikaha, in the mode of goodness,
dhanijasaha,
in the mode of passion,
Tamasaha,
in the mode of
ignorance,
also, iti, thus,
yet,
what is,
vidha,
divided,
ravya
shakti, powers that evolve matter,
kriya
shakti,
initiation that creates,
jnana shakti,
intelligence that dies,
iti, thus, prabhu,
O Master,
translation and purport of his divine grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada Ki. Please repeat. The self-centered
materialistic ego
thus being transformed,
into three features,
becomes known as the modes of goodness, passion,
and ignorance
in three divisions. Namely the powers that evolve matter,
knowledge of material creation,
and the intelligence that guides such materialistic activities.
Narada,
you are quite competent.
You are quite competent
to understand this. Materialistic ego, or the sense of identification with matter, is grossly self-centered, devoid of clear knowledge of the existence of God. And this self-centered egoism of the materialistic living entities is the cause of their being conditioned by the other paraphernalia and continuing their bondage of material existence. In the Bhagavad Gita, this self-centered egoism is very nicely explained in the 7th chapter, verses 24 through 27. The self-centered impersonalist, without a clear conception of the personality of Godhead, concludes in his own way that the personality of Godhead takes a material shape from his original impersonal spiritual existence for a particular mission. And this misleading conception of the Supreme Lord by the self-centered impersonalist continues, even though he seemed to be very interested in the Vedic literatures, such as the Brahma Sutras and other highly intellectual sources of knowledge. This ignorance of the personal feature of the Lord is due simply to ignorance of the mixture of different modes. The impersonalist thus cannot conceive of the Lord's eternal spiritual form of eternal knowledge, bliss and existence. The reason is that the Lord reserves the right of not exposing himself to the non-devotee, who even after a thorough study of literature like the Bhagavad Gita, remains an impersonalist simply by obstinacy. This obstinacy is due to the action of Yoga Maya, a personal energy of the Lord that acts like an aid hand by covering the vision of the obstinate impersonalist. Such a bewildered human being is described as Mura, or grossly ignorant, because he is unable to understand the transcendental form of the Lord as being unborn and unchangeable. If the Lord takes a form or material shape from his original impersonal feature, then it means that he is born and changeable from impersonal to personal. But he is not changeable, nor does he ever take a new birth like a conditioned soul. The conditioned soul may take a form birth after birth due to his conditional existence in matter, but the self-centered impersonalist, by their gross ignorance, accept the Lord as one of them because of self-centered egoism, even after so-called advancement of knowledge in the Vedanta. The Lord, being situated in the heart of every individual living entity, knows very well the tendency of such conditioned souls in terms of past, present and future, but the bewildered conditioned soul hardly can know him in his eternal form. By the will of the Lord, therefore, the impersonalist, even after knowing the Brahman and Paramatma features of the Lord, remains ignorant of his eternal personal features and has ever existed Narayana, transcendental to all material creation. The cause of such gross ignorance is constant engagement by the materialistic man in the matter of artificially increasing material demands. The cause of such gross ignorance is constant engagement by the materialistic man in the matter of artificially increasing material demands. To realize the Supreme Personality of Godhead, one has to purify the materialistic senses by devotional service. The mode of goodness or the Brahmanical culture recommended in Vedic literature is helpful to such spiritual realization. And thus, the Jnana Shakti stage of the conditioned soul is comparatively better than the other two stages, namely Dravya Shakti and Kriya Shakti. The whole material civilization is manifested by a huge accumulation of materials, or in other words, raw materials for industrial purposes. And the industrial enterprises, Kriya Shakti, are all due to gross ignorance of spiritual life. In order to rectify this great anomaly of material civilization, based on the principles of Dravya Shakti and Kriya Shakti, one has to adopt the process of devotional service of the Lord by adoption of the principles of Karma Yoga mentioned in the Bhagavad Gita 9:27 as follows. Yat karosi yat asnasi, yat juhoshi dadasi yat, yat tapasyasi kaunteya, tat kurusva mat arpanam. O son of Kunti, all that you do, all that you eat, all that you offer and give away, as well as all austerities that you may perform, should be done as an offering unto me. Yashva Tupa, transcendental Bhaktivinoda Prabhupada. Before we try and say something of this very wonderful verse, we seek the blessings of our spiritual master, Shri Prabhupada, all Vaishnavas assembled, all Acharyas. So we will not say anything wrong or offensive or incorrect in the course of our discussion.
Om Ajnana Viranasya Jnananjanalalakaya Chakshurukritam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namah Shri Chaitanya Vishnu Sthapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Brahmanam Dadami Swaranam Yidam Vandeham Shri Guru Shri Radhakamalam Shri Guru Chaitanya Shri Rupam Sadrajatam Sarvadaravadaramitam Namaskrishimam Sarvaitam Swahudutam Vajanatam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padam Sarvadaram Dantashim Shakadukam Shiram Shri Krishna Padrasiro
Hare Krishna Mataji.
Hare Krishna.
Krishna Prabhu, Hare Krishna Mahaprabhu.
Hare Krishna.
Welcome today to meeting from Bhagavatam. We are very, very grateful to take darshan of the Roshi Shishi Jagna Paradev Sukramai team. They are so opulent and they are so kind to give us their darshan. We cannot take this darshan for granted ever. And we must really thank Shri Narayan Prabhu, Mataji. They have taken up Krishna consciousness very, very wonderfully through the nice association of devotees. And it is always said in sastras that just like one can come to understand the glories of a spiritual master by the sincerity and behavior of his disciples, it is also said in sastras that one can come to know and understand the sincerity of the worshipper by seeing the object of his worship. So really, if we continue to take darshan of such wonderful deities and all the hard-working devotees who take so wonderful care of them, surely Krishna wants, you know, he will imbibe in us greater quality of devotional service. That is good. That is what we want. We may want so many other things, but that is secondary. But the primary point we are here, gathered, is not for anything else, but it is somehow or another to become useful instruments and to increase quality of devotional service for the pleasure and the glorification of Krishna. Jai Shri Prabhupada ki. In this verse, as we are going on now, one line is very important, and it is the last line of the translation. After speaking on how the materialistic ego evolves itself into the three modes of material nature, and how the three modes of material nature each have their different characteristics, Brahmaji then says, Narada, you are quite competent to understand this. I found this very, very wonderful, because I think only Narada can understand this verse. It's not an easy verse to understand. If you break down the way Brahmaji is explaining the different ways of understanding material creation, a lot of it just flies beyond our head actually. That's why I think specifically, you know, it is stated here that one must be competent to understand this. Otherwise it is very difficult. That is why Srila Prabhupada gave an extensive purport on this, to make us understand what exactly Brahmaji is trying to say and what we should take from this verse to understand it in the daily life of our lives as struggling devotees. So that point of competence is something for us to keep in mind. Just by saying that Narada is very competent, Brahmaji was actually hinting at our lack of competence. That it must only be that this knowledge of Bhagavatam can be gotten by one who is competent. But the qualification of Narada's competence did not rest on his theoretical knowledge. It did not rest on his mastery of knowledge and Vedas, but it rested on his submissive attitude in his devotional service to Krishna and his acceptance of Brahmaji, his father, as his superior. So these are the qualifications for one to become competent in devotional service. And without the mercy of Guru, Shastra, Sadhu, it is very difficult to understand these topics. Sometimes modern science says that they have very complicated explanations of how material life has been born. But these material scientists should read 2nd Canto, Chapter 5, 3rd Canto from maybe 25th chapter up to 29th chapter, and when they read the breakdown of the examples of how each material mode of nature and each organ of creation is being evolved, I think they cannot understand it either, despite their vast so-called scholarship. So this shows us that there is a way to understand Bhagavatam, and the way is to hear Prabhupada and to follow in his footsteps. Prabhupada actually makes two important points. It is divided into two paragraphs in this purport. The only two things we should understand at the start is that Prabhupada at the beginning tells us that the formation of this materialistic false ego, it's very nicely stated, the self-centered materialistic ego, is actually the moment we identify our existence with matter. The moment we identify our existence with matter, that day, the self-centered materialistic ego has manifested in our lives. The moment we place more emphasis in our lives on matter as opposed to spirit, then immediately this self-centered materialistic ego catches us. This is the first point we have to understand. The second point that Prabhupada gives in the second paragraph is the solution to come out of this. And he says the only way we can come out of this is to actually stop this constant engagement of artificially increasing our material demands. The more we increase our material demands in this world, the more the self-centered materialistic ego within us will manifest. And when this too happens, then the process of purifying us by way of devotional service is checked. Despite the fact that we are performing devotional service, very often we find ourselves frustrated why we are not progressing. And the reason for it is given very nicely in this purport. So, Prabhupada is now making us concentrate on the nature of this self, of this self-centered materialistic ego. What basically it is that this ego, which is false, means that we have falsely identified with everything around us. We know we are this body, we are convinced we are this body, we are convinced that this is the only knowledge we need, we are convinced that this is my wife, my son, my house, my sound system, my book, my notes, and this is my class. So the more we think this way, the more the self-centered materialistic ego will overtake us. And the more it overtakes us, the less in touch we are with the devotional service. So externally we may appear to be in devotional service, but internally the self-centered materialistic ego is manifesting very strongly. So this is the point we must understand. Prabhupada writes here, and if you read, there are two or three verses in the third canto, 26th chapter, from 21st verse, 22nd verse, 23rd verse, 24th verse. In your free time, if you have, you should look at these verses. Because whenever Acharya speak about these two chapters, they are very close. All points of Vyasakti, Dravyasakti, Yamasakti are discussed very nicely in the purports and in the translation of Kapila Veda. And there, I think it is in 3:26-21. There, very nicely, Prabhupada and Kapila Dev explain this a little bit more for understanding. He says that this materialistic ego actually comes only after Mahatattva has come into being. The week before, Chandrasekhar Prabhu gave us very extensively this point on the Mahatattva. Now we know that after Mahatattva comes into being, then you find that only after it comes into being that this idea of ego, real ego and false ego, is manifested in this material world. But what is very interesting, and sometimes we may miss this point, is that at the beginning when the material ego emanates from Mahatattva, after it has been emanated, three features of the material ego will appear in this material world. One will appear in the mode of goodness. That is known as Jnana Sakshi. This Jnana Sakti simply means, as Prabhupada writes, Jnana Sakti is very nicely defined here as the intelligence that guides. If we use this intelligence to guide us to Krishna consciousness, then this mode of goodness is the platform for us to enter Krishna consciousness. If this Jnana Sakti is not used well, then it will be used for industrial enterprise and exploitation. In material world, I was going to say in Singapore, but actually in material world, industrial enterprise is a good word. Because it means we are enterprising and we are industrious. And industry means money. But Prabhupada writes in the purport that this material nature comes in three shaktis. Intelligence that guides, Kriya Shakti, initiation that creates, and Dravya Shakti. Now you'll find that Dravya Shakti and Kriya Shakti correspond to the mode of ignorance and the mode of passion. When one initiates something in this material world, one is considered industrious, one is considered enterprising. But what we don't realize, as Prabhupada hints in the purport, is that this industrial enterprise, without proper intelligence and direction towards the Supreme Personality of Godhead, will end up with us artificially increasing our material demands. That is the link between the first paragraph and the second paragraph. This is the point you should understand. And the Dravya Shakti is the mode of ignorance. You find that the word to word synonym of Dravya Shakti is the power that evolves matter. At the very base of industrial enterprise is this belief that we actually have the power over matter. This lording over material nature is the cornerstone of exploitation of everything that we have in front of us. The moment we exploit something and use it not in service of Krishna, the self-centered materialistic ego will automatically manifest. The moment it manifests, we will forget Krishna, we will forget who we are. Then even if we perform the devotional service, on the one side, because our lifestyle is increasing the material demands, it will become what we call a drawback, or it will negate whatever we are doing. No doubt devotional service always is progressive. But how long are we going to continue to put one leg in matter and one leg in spirit? Because that is not possible. You just think logically, if you put one leg in one boat and one leg in the other boat and tell boatmen to move the boats, where will you end up? Both the boat will go, but you will end up in the water. So in a way you become failure. Even in material world you are failure, and in spirit world you are definitely failure. So the point that you must understand is, the three modes of material nature are defined by their characteristics. One who is in the mode of goodness, he has the capacity to use his intelligence in the direction of devotional service. And because he uses his intelligence in the mode of directing himself to devotional service, whatever that is in his hands, as Prabhupada quotes the last verse, he quotes in his last paragraph this very wonderful verse from 9:27, then whatever that we have with us, we will offer it to Krishna. And when we offer that to Krishna, then whatever that comes back after the offering doesn't increase our material demands. It actually makes us satisfied. And once we are satisfied in spirit, then matter is automatically taken care of. If we try to satisfy ourselves in matter, then the enterprise and the loading will overpower us. And the intelligence that is supposed to bring us to Krishna consciousness will be misused for industrial enterprise. This is how the three modes of material nature can impact on our lives day to day. Not just in character and behavior, but also in actions. That is why this verse is very important to us. But in the third canto of the 26th chapter, before this material ego can manifest itself into these three material modes of nature, Prabhupada and Kapiladev tell us something very interesting. They say that actually before these material modes are manifested, in this world there is manifested what we call the platform of pure goodness. This platform of pure goodness actually appears first. And its characteristic is it is clean, it is clear, and it is sober. Very nice. Two C's and an S. The mode of purified goodness is characterized by being clean, by being clear, and by being sober. So actually, the constitutional nature that is given to us first is actually that of the fact that we are spirit soul. And if one wants to cross this world of matter to spirit, then Prabhupada writes in his purport, we must become very clear in our intelligence what is our goal of existence. We will have so many material problems, Prabhus and Matajis. They come in form of disease, trouble of work, trouble of family, trouble with yourself. Every one of us, even now, is having one problem that appears to be insurmountable. I think we can say safely that every one of us at this moment, of course, is free because there is Bhagavatam. But the moment the Bhagavatam is finished and we go back, every one of us will have to address one major problem that's coming up on Monday. Definitely. And it is going to cause us anxiety. And we will try with our mind to enterprisingly and industriously solve this problem. But we don't realize that when we do that, we are invoking the mode of passion. And there is nothing there that is spiritual. Instead, if we were to pick up our chanting beads and seriously bury our ways in Bhagavatam, Bhagavatam will give us the solution to all problems. But because we miss that, we miss the purified goodness of clarity. When clarity is there, then cleanliness is automatic. When one is clear in intelligence about serving the lordships, one becomes automatically clean in his habits. That is why when you go to Brahmachari ashrams, you realize the leaders of Brahmachari ashrams are very particular about the hygiene and state of Brahmachari ashram. Because the state of one's house and one's room, one's table and one's drawer, and one's clothes are very much indicative of one's state of consciousness. If you are messy by nature, how can you be clean and simple in devotional service? Doesn't go hand in hand. You will definitely be messy also. What we don't realize is that whatever material baggage we carried with us before we became devotees, we are going to carry into Virupakarma temple. Because of this conditional existence, inevitably we are carrying it. That's why your nature was sadhu before you came to Krishna consciousness, chances are you are sadhu after. But the truth of the truth is, if you were hot-tempered before Krishna consciousness, when you come into Krishna consciousness, you will exhibit that hot-temperedness somewhere. It should not be there. It should become purified, but it is not because of the self-centered ego. It is still there. So what we don't realize is, until we become clean in our habits and our consciousness, until we are clear in our intelligence, we cannot become dhira. Dhira means to become sober. We cannot understand that this is the end of Krishna. We cannot understand when the reversal of life comes, that why Krishna you are doing this. We don't ask why. We say that Krishna, let me see your hand in it. The why presupposes egotistically that it should not happen to me. Why? Because I'm a good devotee. That's the only reason why we say, why Krishna it is happening to me? Because in our hearts of hearts of hearts, we genuinely believe that we are good devotees. And we genuinely do not believe that we are rascals. It doesn't help our self-esteem, we say. How am I to become better in spiritual life with you if I am very demoralized? But at the same time, we should not paint a picture which is not true. The truth is, everything we get, we deserve. No one gets anything in this material world that he or she does not deserve. That is a fact. If you can accept it, then dhira is a quality that you have embraced. If you cannot accept it because of self-centered egoism, then we will suffer. Because we will lament over the reversals of our lives. Why this must happen? Did the Pandavas lament? Did they spend 13 years in exile lamenting every day, why did this happen to me? Did they lament when Krishna came, instead of talking nice discussions with Krishna, they should have. If I was in their place, every day if I saw Krishna, I would say, Krishna, why? 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 Every day I would say, why? After a while I would say, don't come and see me. What's the point? That's what I would feel. If I was Draupadi Mata and I was being disrobed, you know, I would think, Krishna, I'm your devotee, why? But she didn't have time to think why, she didn't think why. She just depended on Krishna. That's all. So every devotee who has suffered in material life has never ever blamed Krishna and asked why. He has only said, I am fully deserving of this problem. Let me now with full velocity, Vivrena Bhakti Yogena, concentrate on my devotional service, because obviously my sadhana is defective. Obviously my devotional service is defective. This is the reason for my difficulty. When a devotee does that, in that moment of sobriety, he has become clean, he has become clear, and the mode of goodness and purified goodness manifests in his heart. And he becomes purified on the platform of devotional service. That is why it is nicely stated that actually at the start, all of us have this embedded in us. We all have the capacity to come to the platform of Vishuddha Sattva. But what stops us? Prabhupada writes in the purport to, I think he writes in the purport of 326-21. He says, the living being exists in a natural state of Krishna consciousness. This is a wonderful statement Prabhupada makes. The living being actually exists in a natural state of Krishna consciousness. Not that we are naturally forgetful. No. We have become conditioned to be forgetful. But naturally we are with Krishna consciousness. Now we hear what Prabhupada says. He says, but because we are marginally independent, we just have little bit of independence, the living entity, this marginal independence, allows the living entity to forget Krishna. We make use, or rather we misuse, or we abuse this independence to immediately exercise our right that we are separate from Krishna. And Prabhupada says, practically speaking, this is the cause of our bondage. And this is exactly what Prabhupada writes in the same program, that the cause of our bondage is the forgetfulness of our very position. And Prabhupada gives a very nice example practically for all devotees. He says, this is why someone acting, this is in the purport of 23 and 24, he says, this is why someone who is acting in Krishna consciousness suddenly changes. Prabhupada writes the statement. He says, sometimes we see people in Krishna consciousness, suddenly they change. For a while, very pakka, 16 rounds, waiting a Mangala Arati, 1 year, 2 years, not waking up a Mangala Arati, no Krishna consciousness, or slackening, as we say. So, how does this happen? So Prabhupada writes, devotional service is like razor's edge. And I've heard razor's edge so many times. But until I read this purport, then I understood exactly what razor's edge actually means. Prabhupada says that razor's edge is a situation where, supposing a man, right, he nicely shaves his cheeks. He's shaving very nicely. But at the moment, suddenly, as soon as his attention is diverted from the shaving, he's cut himself. Those of you who shave, that doesn't include motherliness. We will all know that the moment we are not attentive to our shaving, the moment you start looking at how handsome you are, you forget how you're shaving, you cut yourself. Isn't it true? Always happens, you know. So when that happens, Prabhupada says, the person's attention has been diverted from his shaving. And because his attention has been diverted, therefore he has cut himself. In the same way, Prabhupada said, the reason why this has happened is because he has mishandled his razor. Such a nice point. He has mishandled his razor. So Prabhupada says that if you put that into practice, that not only must we come to the stage of pure Krishna consciousness, but one must also be very careful when we are in Krishna consciousness. Because the slightest moment of inattentiveness or carelessness in our devotional service may cause us to fall down. Back to Kriya Sakti, Dravya Sakti, Jnana Sakti. So see how nice this point is. That the moment we lose the attention to Krishna, the moment we become careless in our devotional service, anyhow we do, the moment we think today's program is simply a ritual, I have to come because what else am I going to do on Sunday? You know, or I have to come because it makes me feel good. This is not the reason why we come for temple programs. Not to feel moral, not to feel good, not to feel I'm a good person, but to glorify Krishna. If we are attentive to glorify Krishna, if we are attentive to actually make sure that we are not careless in our behavior towards the devotees of Krishna, then the razor will not cut our chin. If we can do that, then the materialistic self-centered ego will not touch us. Otherwise, this fall down will be manifested, as Prabhupada writes extensively in the first paragraph, by the attitude of the materialists and the impersonalists, who unfortunately regards Krishna as an ordinary being. One time my Guru Maharaj was asked this point of impersonalism, and he said that you can be a devotee and still be an impersonalist. Because actually we are impersonal by nature. We may stand before Krishna, we may dance before Krishna, but do we really actually believe wholeheartedly, with heart of hearts, that Krishna is present before us? If we don't believe that, we are impersonalists. Because then we will behave and not have faith that Krishna's form and his existence and his names and his pastimes are all spiritual. As Pastor Guru said very nicely yesterday, you can chant Coca-Cola so many times, but it doesn't mean you feel quenched. How nice if the world was such that you can just think of a drink and you become quenched. Of course, business will be gone. Right? Imagine, you know, if you don't have to eat at restaurants, very simple, you just think of the food that you like. You like some prasadam, you think of it, that's it, Gopal is out of business. Nobody has to eat prasadam. But this can only be done with the holy name of the Lord, which is non-different from Krishna. And the holy form of the Lord, which is non-different from Krishna. By just seeing Jagannath Balade Subhadra, it is non-different from being in Puri. It is non-different from being in the spiritual world. But because the impersonalist cannot see this, and you can't really, really blame him on only one round. The blame only comes because of one reason. Because he is obstinate. He's stubborn. his ego has become so inflated, Prabhupada writes, that he refuses to accept that the Supreme Lord is not an ordinary human being. He is envious of the fact that someone else can be better than him. That is the height of envy. Normally we compare ourselves with each other. But if when you start comparing yourself with Krishna, like Pandurga Dev, you know, Krishna in the false Vasudeva, you remember, then you're really in trouble. Pandurga got into it, somehow he got into this head of his, that he was actually the real Vasudeva. That the false Vasudeva, Krishna in Dwarka, had stolen all his weapons, all his insignia and everything that was due to him. And he had very bad akshasandha. All his ministers, out of their own motives, they wanted to make sure that he felt he was Vasudeva. So of course he was riding on the wave of popularity, and he had the cheek to send a messenger to Dwarka with a letter to demand that Krishna send back all the items and all his paraphernalia that belongs to Pandurga. And Krishna laughed and laughed and laughed, Bhagavatam says, so much. And then after that he gave a very sound message to the messenger to tell him that if he's really Vasudeva, ask him to come claim it from me. And so they met on the battlefield. And on the battlefield, Krishna just playfully played with Pandurga. You know, like a cat or a lion plays with a mouse, Bhagavatam tells us. But at the end of the day, this great king, who believed that he was as strong as Krishna, who did not believe that the form of Krishna was transcendental, he had to meet with the most logical of fate, and that is death. So we too, the impersonalist also must be extremely careful, Bhagavatam says. Because of his obstinacy of not catching and accepting Krishna as supreme, if we don't accept that Krishna is all in all for us, then we are no better than impersonalists. If we don't accept that Krishna's form will give us great relief from material existence, then actually speaking, we don't believe in Krishna. And if that happens, then Bhagavatam tells us Krishna himself will assist you to forget him, so to speak. Through the agency of Yoga Maya. What is that famous verse? Maya Javannika Channam Adhyaroksha Mavyayam Na Lakshate Mura Drisha Nato Natyadvaro Yataha. Kunti Mata sings this prayer, second prayer, right after her first very famous prayer. She says that you are beyond the sense of perception. You are beyond the range of the limited sense perception of the living entities. And because you are beyond the limited range of the perception, as Chamsikar Prabhu told us 2 weeks ago, why is it that we cannot ask this question to Krishna, why we were born pure into this world and we became impure? If we really came from Krishna, why all this drama? Why can't we just stay with Krishna? And Prabhupada said, correctly our acharyas have said this point, that we cannot understand the reason for it. It is inconceivable for our puny mind. But the impersonalist who cannot accept that, he says, it's because you don't know the answer. That's why you're saying that. But he doesn't understand that the answer is beyond his limited range of sense perception. To those people, Maya Javani Akachanna. To these people, Krishna puts forward that powerful curtain of Yoga Maya, and he deludes these persons until they come to a point where they cannot understand anything about Krishna because they are fully conditioned by material existence. So this point we must understand. And we must understand that if this happens, then likewise, the obstinacy and the stubbornness of the impersonalist is the obstacle for devotees also in devotional service. If devotees are stubborn about not changing their behavior, about not changing the quality of their devotional service, then we also become deluded. We believe that we are very powerful. We have this self-inflated belief that we are all actually good devotees. No, very, very seldom devotees genuinely believe that they are not up to the mark. Very often, it's my experience that I feel deep inside that actually, no, my devotional service is quite alright. Of course, when people say, Prabhu, you're doing very nice, of course it is culture that we say, no, I'm nothing. But the truth is, do we really believe that we are nothing? Inside, do we feel, no, actually I'm something? You know, I'm just a little bit better in my devotional service than you are, Guru. You may be a good devotee, you know, you may give good class and all, but my classes have this angle that you can't touch. Maybe your singing is nice, but the way I sing, you know, it's just a little bit different from you. Maybe your cooking is nice, but the way I do, it's just an extra touch that you cannot touch. Like that, the self-centered materialist ego, it manifests itself, you know, in all these places. And we are stubborn. We don't want to see this. But in our hearts of hearts, we know that this is the defect. And because of that, Yoga Maya conveniently stops us from becoming happy in devotion service. Then what would be the solution to this? Prabhupada mentions first that in the verses of 725 to 727 of Bhagavad Gita, this characteristic of the impersonalist and the materialist must be avoided. If you read chapter 7, text 27 and 25, you know that they speak of one very important thing. And that is, especially in 727, chapter 727 is very important. It is Icha Dvesha Samuttena. Icha and Dvesha. Right? And then Dvanda, Moha. So the point is, the characteristic of one who is in materialistic ego, if we really want to know whether we are in false ego, then all we have to do is just see whether we are doing two things in our lives. Are we accepting and rejecting? As long as we are accepting and rejecting material things, we are definitely not on the mode of goodness. We are definitely on the mode of passion and ignorance. One day you accept one person as your good friend. The next day, I and you not happy with each other. Okay, finish. Our life, you go your way, I go my way. One day Prabhu greets me, Hare Krishna, I leave Hare Krishna. Next day, he doesn't look at me, no more Hare Krishna to me. Accept, reject. One day when one Prabhu comes up and tells you honestly, Prabhu, these are the problems. Oh, till now I accepted your goodwill. But now that you're criticizing me, I now reject you. Like that, our whole life is filled with rejection and acceptance. One day we accept our husband as all in all. Next day we are all in all. One day our children are wonderful. Next day our children are assholes. This way we live in our material life. So one day we accept Krishna. Another day when Krishna throws us difficult things, we reject him. Third day we whine and groan because we can't go anywhere else. We come back to Krishna. This accepting and rejecting is causing us moha. And this is the reason why we cannot see Krishna. This is the reason. And because we cannot see Krishna that way, the moment you hate or you despise, immediately there is obstinacy in your behavior. And the moment one is obstinate about rejection and acceptance, then automatically one's ego cannot allow one to come to the natural state of Krishna consciousness that the soul is supposed to be in. So the question we may ask is, why does Krishna put these blocks for us? If he wants us to go back to him, why put these blocks? The blocks are there, Bhagavatam says, because we have to generate the quality of genuine gratitude and repentance. If we have this quality of gratitude and repentance in our heart, then Krishna will automatically lift the veil. Kunti Mata's prayers are full of that. They are full of gratitude. Kunti Mata repeatedly prayed to Krishna, Krishna, how kind you are. How kind you were. She suffered so much, but still she said, Krishna, how kind you were. Now if you go, who are we? What will we do? We are bereft of everything. This is the mood of gratitude of a devotee. And that is why Kunti Mata could understand that Krishna was the Supreme Personality of Godhead. She understood that based on her bewilderment of his wonderful potency of being within Uttaramata's womb and outside Uttaramata's womb. But she accepted her bewilderment. The impersonalist cannot accept his bewilderment. And therefore he rejects Krishna. But the devotee accepts that he is bewildered by the power of the Lord. And in doing so, he accepts the force and power of Krishna. He accepts that Krishna is beyond his range of limited sex perception. And in that, therein lies his qualification to approach Krishna. When the soul in its minute form, in the beginning part of life, when it enters into the womb of the living entity, In the second prayer, it prays, Yasvatrapadda ivakarma vyavikratma Bhutendrayasa yamanim avalambya mayam Aste vishuddham avikaram akhanda bodham Atapyamana avasitam No, atapyamana hridayam avasitam namami. This prayer is very important for all of us. Because this prayer will take us out of the self-centered materialistic ego. And in the prayer, we all chanted this prayer. When we were in the wombs of our mothers, every one of us chanted this prayer perfectly. Whether you are a Western-bodied baby, African baby, Mediterranean baby, Indian baby, it doesn't matter. Your Sanskrit was perfect. You chanted perfectly, your meter was perfect, everything was perfect. You know, of course now it's a different story. But then it was perfect. And at that perfect point, it's good to hear what the baby, what his unborn child spoke. He says very nicely that Krishna, by your arrangement of Maya, I have forgotten you. This is the acceptance of the fact that we have forgotten Krishna. The acceptance of our conditioned state, not constitutional state, but conditioned state. Now having accepted that, the soul says that by the arrangement of Maya and by my activities which were not pious, that he says in his first verse, I have been put into this womb and now I am in difficulty. And because I am in difficulty, I am trapped, bandha. But despite me being trapped, you are still with me in the womb. And you are next to me in the womb. But you are not like an ordinary entity like me. You are aste vishuddham, akhanda bodham. You are unchanging. You are eternal. And you are always transcendental. Immediately, the living entity in his pure state of consciousness is able to accept that Krishna, his form, is transcendental. The moment he is born, he has misused his marginal independence and he has forgotten Krishna. But that is not to say that he can reverse, he cannot reverse this. He can, because it is his natural state to forget. So he says at the end of that, now he has accepted, he is grateful. Now he says, Krishna, you are so kind that you are sitting with me in this terrible place of the womb. I am being bitten by worms. My mother eats hot chili. I have to suffer. Mother eats horrible stuff of meat and this and that. I have to partake of the meat through the umbilical cord. Can you imagine? But if mother takes prasadam, I am very happy. But like that, I am suffering. I have no space to turn. It is all dark, no electricity, no light. If some worm is biting me at the back, I can't turn around to scratch. You just imagine, you're sitting down like that, something is biting you. You can't take it, you scratch. Imagine in the womb, the space is so little, it's really little. You can't turn to scratch. You know, you can't turn. And we say that the body is okay, it's okay, baby is very happy in the womb. Who says the baby is happy in the womb? The baby is happy in the womb, baby would have come out smiling. Anybody just for curiosity sake has been more laughing? Did any of your nurses tell your mother, oh, this child is very happy when he came? Nobody has said that. Every child that has been born has cried like anything. Isn't that the simplest indication of how much suffering he had inside and how much suffering he is ready to endure outside? So the point is, he accepts his condition and he says, Krishna, you are so kind, but you can only be perceived by one who is repentant. Atapyamana hridayam avasitam namami. Only by one who is repentant genuinely in his heart, that you are the Supreme, that I have forgotten you, and that spirit is more important than matter. When we have that mood of devotional service, then Sashtras tell us, then Bhagavatam tells us, we are able to come out of this Kriya Sakti, Dravya Sakti, and come to the platform Kropa drives of at least Jnana Sakti. Because now we are using our intelligence to guide us in the proper direction of Krishna consciousness. All of us, somehow or another, by Krishna's mercy, Krishna gave us the intelligence to bring us to Viruma Kalita Temple. Otherwise, our lives would have been very different. What would we be doing on a Sunday morning? What would we be doing 10 years ago on a Sunday morning? Waking up late, hanging around the house, going out somewhere. Now it is unmanageable. and in anything. So this is the point we must understand. If we have gratitude and if we have this, we are safe. But the impersonal is, may have so much Vedic knowledge profanized in the purport. He may be full. I don't know whether you all have met impersonalists, but some impersonalists, their knowledge of Vedanta Sutra and Brahma Sutra and their knowledge of Sastras is sometimes overwhelming. They are very powerful preachers, so to speak. But they cannot still understand Krishna. They cannot. All these brahmanas who sat down to do the fire sacrifice in Krishna book, they were very expert with mantras. But when Krishna and Balaram came to ask them for food, because they were hungry, they forgot the one important point of sastra, that the whole objective of their yajna was to satisfy these two boys. Instead, they threw all the food in the fire, and they forgot the object of that was these two personalities standing in front of them. They might as well have just kept them down in the center and fed them. That would have been the best sacrifice. But because impersonalists, you know, the attitude of not praying to Krishna, not accepting Krishna, means they have to work under some master. So they came under Kamsa, and because they were under Kamsa, they were completely blinded by materialistic ego. But look at their wives. They were not expert in sastras. They were spending whole day cooking these preparations so to serve their husband and serve the Lord. Husband told them to cook, they cooked. But when Krishna and Balaram came to ask for prasadam, did they deny? They could understand the highest truth ahead of these great so-called brahmanas. Because Krishna was not impersonal to them. Krishna was living force to them. He was actually a boy. He was actually a personality. And so out of the innocence of their heart, without complicating their lives, without complicating their existence, they merely accepted Krishna as the object of worship. No questions asked. And because they did that, they became very peaceful in their devotional service. And despite the fact that these brahmanas became very sorry at the end, that, oh, we made a mistake, we should have given everything to Krishna. But because of their fear of Kamsa, and because of their genuine lack of faith, and subtle envy because of asat sangha of Kamsa, they continued in their foolhardy ways. And in that way, they continued deeper and deeper and deeper into material existence. So we can understand how important it is for us to accept this. There's a nice verse that Prabhupada would quote, Nayam Atma Pravachanena Labhyo. This is a very important verse Prabhupada quoted. He said that you may have full qualification of sastric knowledge. Na medaya na bahuna sudena. You may have very great intelligence, you may know sastra very well. You may, yam evaisya sumite, yam evaisya vinute tena labhyas. You may even be very expert at hearing. You may be very expert at hearing and accepting. But if Krishna does not want to give His mercy, you cannot enter into His kingdom. This is the overriding principle of Krishna consciousness. That we cannot put Krishna to the corner and say, this is my sadhana scorecard. 16 rounds every day. Every day, 1 hour of Bhagavatam. Every day eating only Krishna Prasad. Every day associating with deities. Pakka deity worship. 5 items here, 64 items, everything done. Now, give me mercy. Don't do that. You can do all that, and Krishna may just say, no, deny for the moment. Provisional. Acceptance. He is still up to his own sweet will. Otherwise, why did the Pandavas go to hell? We just think about it. They did everything right. Yes, sadhana scorecard must be unimaginable. Just think, it must be amazing how much sadhana they must have had. How much they must be remembering Krishna all the time. But despite all that, exile, disrobing, being cheated, right to the point where they had to fight the war. Why? Nayam Atma Pravachanena Labhyam. As a devotee, the thing that divides us from a materialist or an impersonalist is the fact that we accept finally Krishna. We come here not under any motive that we want to take something back. We come here to glorify you. After this, if we go out and a car knocks us down, we are not going to say, why? I just came to see you. Go outside. Accident. We can't say that. Because Krishna will say, Nayam Atma Pravachanena Labhyo. It is my own sweet will. It is my own seat. A devotee who has that attitude, the curtain of Maya is lifted. This is important. The conclusion is very nice in the second paragraph. Because in the second paragraph, Prabhupada writes very nicely that the cause of such gross ignorance is actually because of the materialistic man acting in a manner of artificially increasing material demands. You know, in the first chapter, first canto, I think it's in the first chapter, one of the purports, Prabhupada writes very nicely. There are four factors in our lives which will sap the very vitality of the human existence. And he says the first is overeating, oversleeping, over-endeavoring, right? Artificial standards of living. And over-dependence on others' mercy. Yeah, actually it's over-dependence on others' mercy. So it is overeating, over-sense gratification, over-dependence on others' mercy, and artificial standards of living. This artificial standards of living is the artificial increase of demand. This is the point that Prabhupada is making here. That the moment we start increasing our demands in material life, we will forget Krishna. We will plunge right into the modes of Kriya Sakti and Dravya Sakti. And our intelligence will become bewildered. People ask, you know, how to become simple. But the simplicity is not to be artificial. That means, I asked Guru Maharaj one time, how does one artificially increase one's demand? So Maharaj said, supposing you have one pair of shoes. One pair is enough. Why do you have to buy 3 pairs of shoes? Monday one shoe, Wednesday one shoe, Tuesday one shoe, Thursday one shoe. Why? One shoe is enough. Use it until it cannot be used, and buy another shoe. Maharaj also told me this. In the whole planet, all the animals, they don't have saving propensity. Whatever that is there, they will eat, and that's the end of it. The next day, they will go, they will find, they will eat, and that's the end of it. Only we are very, very, very special. When we go and take something, if you have a piece of meat, for example, in an open plain, the lion will come, it will take the meat and eat and go. If it's too much, it will just take what it can and will go. If man comes and he sees that piece of meat, he will take what he can and the rest he will put in his pockets and he will walk away. And he will say, this is intelligence. Why? Because I'm saving for the rainy day. But Bhagavatam says there is foolishness. Because you have to create more space for what you are saving. More space means you need more items. You need storage. Your shoe cabinet becomes like a water. Everything that you have in excess. When we stop doing these small things, the small things add up to living anti-Vedic life. Anti-Vedic life cannot be with Bhagavatam. Bhagavatam means Vedic life. Vedic life means simple. Only to the extent that we need something, we should use it. To the extent that we don't need it, we should reject it. Not say I'm keeping it just in case one day I'm going to use it. Because now the price is very cheap for you. Next time it'll increase. This is misuse of intelligence. And in that way, the yogi becomes so simple in his life that if something is taken away from him, his ego does not flash. Otherwise, if something is taken from him, he's disturbed. He's automatically disturbed. You remember the famous story that Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur Maharaj spoke. And I think it's very important for us to daily remember to read the Gita. You know? There was this sadhu and he met one disciple. So before sadhu left, he instructed disciple on how important it is to read the Gita. How important it is to study Bhagavatam. So disciple said, now spiritual master kindly instruct me how to study Gita. He said, it's very simple. You sit down, you concentrate and bury your head and please you just ignore all other formalities. Just study. That is my instruction to you. Now 1 year later I will come and I will see how you are. So disciple sat down and he started studying. Before he could study, he wanted to organize himself. So what happened was he had 2 cowpeas. One on one day, one on the other day. Very simple. But one of his cowpeas, he realized always it was being bitten by the rats. So he thought, what to do with it? He thought, I have to take care of the rat first. And the best way to make sure the rat doesn't disturb me, right, because disturbing something that belongs to me, therefore it is disturbing me, is to get a cat. If I get a cat, the rat is taken care of. So for a while it was very good. The cat took care of the rat. He could sit down and he was ready to read the Bhagavad Gita because he was not disturbed that there were holes in his clothes. Now, as it happens, the cat cannot live on love and fresh air. Cat has to drink milk. So he was thinking, if I'm to be disturbed with all this milk and all, how am I going to study the Gita? I have to be in perfect consciousness to study the Gita. So he thought, let's get a cow. If I keep a cow in the place, I don't have to go somewhere to get milk. I'll just milk the cow, give the cat, cat takes care of the rat, rat takes care, rat is taken care of, my clothes are alright. And then I'll give the Gita. So he's about to do that, he brings in the cow. But he realizes it, and we all will realize, cow doesn't mean the cow just stands there and every day you just squeeze and you get milk. Cow needs to eat. It can't survive on love and fresh air too. And for those of us who have tried to milk the cow, you know, as Prabhupada said, if you want to milk the cow, be prepared for the kids. That is also literal. So it's not easy to take care of cows. Cow protection program is not easy. You need manpower. So he thought, what's the best thing to do? I don't recommend this solution, but he said that he should get married. If I have a wife, then wife will take care of all these things, and then after taking care of all these things, I'll be very nice and sit down to study. And since I study, she'll get 50% of my bhakti, she should be very happy also. So like that, he decided that he will get married. This is not the reason for you to get married. And at the same time, when he got the wife, he thought life was going to become very easy. So he got ready to start to read the Gita, when wife said, who is going to maintain the cow? Who's going to maintain me? You have all along lived under the key, that's alright. But now we're going to start a family, we will have children. Children need a house, they need playthings, they need to go to school. All this time, where's your earnings? He said, I was going to read the Gita. Wife said, no Gita, where's work? Then what happens when Diwali comes? Where's my new sari? So the man said, I never thought of all this. He said, well, you got married, you have to start thinking. So he thought, I'll take care of all these things. Then she will take care of the cow. Cow will take care of the cat. Cat will take care of the rat. My clothes are alright. Then I will read chapter 1 of the Bhagavad Gita. And as he was just going to sit down, he realized that, oh, I have to bring children to school. I have to work hard in the fields. I have to build a nice house because, you know, trees will not suffice anymore. And 1 year passed. And Guru came. And when he came to the same place, he thought, I've come to the wrong place. Because I thought I was expecting to see a simple boy studying under the tree Bhagavad Gita. But now I see it's a township. You know, it's a township already. I'm seeing few cows, I'm seeing some children running around, I see one Mataji over there, and one man working hard like a donkey in the fields. And he looked, hey, that's my disciple. So he called his disciple and said, disciple, what happened? I thought you were going to read the Bhagavad Gita. And he said, Maharaj, I did all this so that I can read the Gita. And Maharaj said, have you read the Gita? He said, no, I'm just going to start now. It's just coming into me after 1 year. So this is our condition. That there are so many things that artificially we increase in our lives. And if these things are not kept simple, then how are we ever going to take up devotion for it? As it is, what we have now, please don't throw. Now you have a family, please don't throw the family and say this is the class and this is the reason for it. If you have family, please continue. But remember 927 of Bhagavad Gita. The best way we use the energy of the Lord and to come out of this self-centered or extended self-centeredness is to offer everything that we have in service of Krishna. That's why Arjuna was given the most practical instruction in concluding. 8-7 of Bhagavad Gita. What's the verse? Tasmat sarveshu kaleshu mam anusmara yudhyaccha. Right? My arpita mano buddhi mam evaishasi asamsayaha. Therefore, O Arjuna, you should think of me in the form of Krishna, not in formless, but in form of Krishna. And having accepted me as Krishna, therefore, right, at the same time, mam anusmara yudhyaccha, you should fight. So we are going about all our activities, but in every activity we see the end of Krishna. whether it is good or bad, we don't accept or reject. We just see it as the end of Krishna. And instead of being caught up by it and forgetting to read the Gita, we are always mindful with Jnana Sakti that we should remember that, ah, this is Maya Devi. This is the point that I should be careful. And can we do that without the mercy of the Lord? To think that we can do that artificially is also artificial. But to do that always depending on the mercy of the Lord becomes natural. This is the way that a devotee should live. And if he does that, then 9:27, 8:7, Maya Arpita Mano Buddhi, with your activity is dedicated to me, with your mind and intelligence fixed on me, you will attain without doubt. Not just going back to Krishna after the life is over, but now, here and now, we can be in Krishna consciousness. No need to wait for that day, but now we can experience satisfaction of life. We can experience happiness in Krishna consciousness by glorifying Krishna, decreasing what we want. We always do this exercise in small groups. You try it one day. You go home to family members, tell them all to take a small piece of paper and write down 5 things that at the moment you cannot live without. Just write down. You find there are many, many different things that will come out. We tried a few times in many circles. A few things were AC. Everyone had to sleep with AC. Fan was very bad. Some people say pillow is very important. Others say so many different things. And out of these 5 items, you just try with some endeavor to try and reduce each of the items. It is not your success that is important. It is your endeavor that Krishna will see. Always remember what Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur Maharaj said. Work in such a way that Krishna will see you. Not that you want to see Krishna. If Krishna sees the endeavor, just endeavor, he is not bothered about perfection. Bali Maharaj learned this in, I think he learned this in 8th canto. 8th canto, 23rd chapter, 2nd verse. In that verse, Prabhupada defines Krishna as Bhava Grahi Janardana. Meaning, Krishna is only interested in the essence of the devotional mentality. How nice Prabhupada makes this statement. The essence of devotional mentality of a devotee. He is not interested in the result. But if he sees someone is sweating very hard to please him, trying all manners to try and please him, Krishna becomes pleased. Bali Maharaj said, how kind Krishna is, that Indra was the one to win, but I, a demon, got the best deal. I was sent to Sutala, but there Krishna promised me that I will be there in the form of Sudarshan Chakra always protecting you. And because Sudarshan Chakra is always there, you will always be able to remember me until your term of staying in Sutala is over and you can come back to me. Did Indra get that? Indra never got that benediction. Why? He didn't ask for it. He asked for Swargaloka. But what did Bali Maharaj do? At the end, when he had lost 2 plots of universes and there was no other place to step, he realized that the only thing left for me to do is to surrender myself. And in surrendering himself, he automatically reduced all his demands. Whatever demands in his heart were there, he simplified them to just one point. Krishna, everything that I am is yours. Please take me now. And because he did that, he was tied up. Bali Maharaj said, I was tied. When Krishna came, when he stood before me at Vamandev, I could not bow before him in proper way. Then he said, I was also tied before that. Because when Sukracharya was with me and all the demons were there, when I came to understand in my heart that you were the Supreme Lord, I could not bow before you because there were other demons with me. Yet, because I even endeavored in my heart to respectfully pay obeisances to you, but I was unsuccessful, despite my endeavor being unsuccessful, you have still given me so much mercy. So what does that prove to us? We must endeavor very hard to please Krishna. Whatever Prabhupada has written here becomes our law book. Prabhupada says we stop artificially creating and increasing material demands. If we really take it seriously, from today we will start to cut down. That is the proper application of Bhagavatam. Otherwise, Bhagavatam is very nice. We read, it is very nice, verse is so beautiful, everything is very nice. Close the book, go back, everything. everything is forgotten in the day. And when we remember it, we say, Krishna, I'm remembering, but I can't act. But we don't even try. So how do we know? That's why Prabhu said, Mataji, if we really want to accept Bhagavatam in our heart, whatever we hear from Bhagavatam, we must try to put it in practice. If we do that, then these three modes of material nature cannot touch us. They cannot touch us. And then our natural state of Krishna consciousness comes. And then Vasudeva, who is very hard to attain, Bhagavad Gita says, he manifests himself in our heart. And Prabhupada writes elsewhere in the purport that Vasudeva comes alone. But when you try to cooperate with Krishna, when a devotee stops being impersonalist, when a living entity stops being impersonalist, then Krishna lives this curtain of Yoga Maya. Then he appears before you, not alone, but together with his internal potency to actually assist you in the devotional service. And very interestingly, in the purport of the third canto, in the 21st chapter, Prabhupada says, when that aspect of Krishna comes with his internal potency to the devotee, you know what he is known as? He is not known as Vasudeva anymore. He is known as Dwarkadish. He is known as Dwarkadish. Is it accident that Dwarkadish is in front of us? It is not. Is it accident that the purport speaks of Dwarkadish with his internal potency? This is the message that Krishna has given us through Bhagavatam and through his body. Jai Radharashivan Bhagavatam Ki. Are there any points, comments, clarifications that Prabhu's Matajis would like to bring up? Yes, we'd like to bring up.
Prabhuji, if you use the mic, it would be good. Because better for devotees to hear you, you know.
Thank you very much for the nice show, Bhagavatam. I hope I will be able to take something back and maintain it in my life also. So we have a few questions. The first question is that you said about Krishna's presence. Although I know a struggling devotee may come bow down, dressed like a devotee, but in heart, in his heart, hearts of hearts, he really doesn't believe that Krishna is present right in front of him in form of a deity. If somebody comes and challenges him that you may not be able to convince the other person, because he himself is not convinced.
Yes.
So, what is the basis on which a devotee can, a practicing devotee can, make him himself realize that, yes, Krishna is there, even though I'm not able to perceive. Even though I'm not able to prove it, I have got no means to, say, okay, here is Krishna. So how we can believe that, okay, Krishna is right here in front of me, as it would be Krishna doesn't exist. And the second question is you mentioned that sometimes a particular person will be a very nice to us. At the other moment he becomes our enemy. Sometimes we pick up a job. The day we go for it, it's the best job that we could ever get. And after a week we find that it's the most worst thing that we have got.
Yes.
And sometimes our relatives are very loving and caring. And after 1 year they become our enemy. So how one can be any three boys or
memory is short, so you must jog, no? Because after you say two questions, the first question, can you just give me a key word again?
Yeah.
Okay, how to be convinced, right? Okay, I'll get the point.
Yes.
Bhagavatam tells us one nice point, Guruji, that despite the fact that the living entity may have been clouded in his consciousness to accept Krishna in his heart, and that because because of his impurity in his heart, over many, many years, he has become conditioned. He cannot accept Krishna with two things, otherwise he will be a pure devotee. Still, if he endeavors to pray to Krishna very hard with all sincerity of purpose, that Krishna, you reveal to me the realization that I need to have in my heart to have full faith in you. With that mood, if he serves the ladies very nicely, if he performs deity worship very lovingly, if he reads Bhagavatam very sincerely, then whatever incompetence he may have, as it appears, becomes erased. And such a devotee, by the mercy of the Lord, becomes very competent to have faith in Krishna. It is not an overnight process, because devotional service is gradual. But good habits are formed early, and bad habits were formed very hard to change. So that's why whenever we speak on Bhagavatam, whenever we are meeting each other, we take that time to remind each other that it is the devotional attitude that is most important. When one has the devotional attitude to balance the point that it is Krishna's mercy that will give you the intelligence to understand that Krishna is in his form here, in that submissive mood, Krishna will give you all that is necessary in your heart to accept. Ananya chintya tumam, ye janaha paripasate, desham nitya abhiyuktanam, yoga kshema mahamyaham. 9:22 of Bhagavad Gita tells us this. If we try to be exclusively devoted to Krishna, and that means Krishna is all in all for us, no one else we need, we don't turn to anyone in trouble except Krishna and his devotees. If innocently we turn to Krishna and lovingly, faithfully we follow our devotional process, then Prabhupada guarantees us in Bhagavad Gita and Bhagavad that whatever that we are lacking, Krishna himself guarantees in 9:22, he will give you the right intelligence to come back to him. Tesham satata yuktanam bhajatam priti purvakam. The key to this dadami buddhi yogam tam is priti purvakam. Priti means dear. When we chant Krishna's names in priti, if we sing Bhagavatam with priti, if we try to do every devotional attitude we have lovingly, then we avoid the callous behavior and we avoid the inattention. The moment these two are avoided, Prabhupada, we will automatically become attentive to Krishna. It is, you just try in any subject matter in this world. If you approach your wife very lovingly and show her that she is the only object of your affection, she is very happy with you. But if you approach her callously and you approach her inattentively, she is telling you a big problem and you are watching soccer, yes. Do you think she will be pleased with you? This is only a material, crude example. But imagine if the same principle were applied to Krishna. So actually, all that is required is the devotional mentality. And that also only the essence. There is a very great saying by Acharyas. If your result is perfect, if a devotee achieves perfect result, Jai Jagannath Bhagavad Sudra Maya please. There's a very nice saying, you know, by Acharyas. I think it was Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, that if your result that you obtain in your endeavor towards Krishna is perfect, but the endeavor was not, it was with motive, Krishna accepts your result. If your result is not perfect, but your endeavor was filled with heartfelt sincerity, he'll accept your endeavor and ignore the result. Both ways you win, because Krishna is so kind. So the point is, Prabhu, that we should not unnecessarily worry, because worrying is also a form of speculation. Instead, use that time to full-heartedly just force. In the beginning, devotional service is possible. Nobody can claim that in the beginning, I come to the temple because I love to come. I am waking up at 4:30 in the morning, jumping out of bed, waiting to greet their lordships. No, somebody has to jump us out of the bed. It's not the other way. But we do it because somehow or another, Krishna, you are pleased, I will drag myself to please you. So that mood is useful for you. Is that okay? The second question, I forgot it. Please come later.
What about accepting and rejecting?
Accepting, rejecting. very easy to preach, as Guru Maharaj says, very difficult to practice. But the best way to practice this Ichha and Dvesha and this rejection and attraction is actually to be fixed in our chanting. If our chanting is fixed very nicely, as Narasimha Maharaj told us in one of our conventions, or one of our retreats, if you sincerely do 16 rounds in the morning and leave your house, for the whole day your rounds will protect you from the power of material energy. It will give you enough steadiness of mind to properly continue and perform your activities without being disturbed. And from the day Maharaj said that, I was very particular myself to try and follow the instruction of Maharaj. And I found personally that somehow or another, this is the beauty of devotional service, that if you do really, really sincere rounds in the morning to the best, to the extent of your sincerity, you are safe in your material life. But if you neglect your rounds, then the rounds will neglect you. That is the way it is. One who neglects his chanting, material life overwhelms him. And if the basis of chanting is good and strict obedience to the instructions of the spiritual master, for those of us who are gurus, and strict obedience to Prabhupada, for those of us who are not initiated, that will automatically make us clear the hurdle of all three shaktis. The verse that you can look on and depend on is 7th Canto, 15th verse, 25th chapter. Rajas, tamas cha sattvena. Right? Rajas and tamas. Sattvam cho sapat, no, cho pasamena cha. So, Yudhishthira Maharaj is instructed by Narada Muni. Narada, no, Yudhishthira, you must conquer passion by ignorance. No, you must conquer ignorance by passion. And after conquering passion and ignorance, you must then come to the platform of goodness. That is how we should go. And from goodness, we must go to Vishuddha Sattva. We must put aside all these egocentric feelings. We must reduce materialistic demands. But, he says in the third line, etat sarvam gurau bhaktya purusho hi anjasa jaye. You will be victorious automatically. All this can be achieved automatically by one who engages in service to Guru with faith and devotion. This is the shortcut of the shortcut of the shortcut, so to speak. That if you follow what Guru Maharaj has said 10%, you are fully perfect. And if you follow Prabhupada 10%, if you follow Bhagavatam 10%, if you follow Parampara 10%, then acceptance, rejection will not touch us. In the beginning, they will definitely creep into our lives. But that doesn't mean we are lost. Immediately, or sometime later, maybe 1 hour later, maybe 2 hours later, maybe one day later, Krishna will give us the intelligence. Ah, this was the problem. I have to look for the solution, which is in Bhagavatam. It may not happen immediately. It is unfair to think and expect that the moment something bad happens to you, immediately you stand up and say, I'm in Krishna consciousness, I rejected this. Very hard for us to do. Chances are it will be for a while we will feel it. But immediately, because of our sadhana, on the strength of the sincerity of the devotee, Krishna will give us the intelligence. Use sastra. Recall what sadhu said. Recall what Prabhupada said. Recall what a devotee said. And then that will suit us. That will give us the direction to move. And slowly, 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 as they say in Singapore slang, right, you will come to a point where this reaction time becomes shorter, shorter, and shorter. That is also his mercy. Is that okay, Prabhuji? Anything else anyone would like to add? Prabhu? We have 5 minutes more, then we have to stop.
As we make the devotees, we observe material, but most of the time we can have the same problem. And we try to give some material solutions to that as an immediate but practically speaking, I myself find it very difficult to put myself in other situation and say in pain. So I have no compassion, and whatever discussion I have, all that is superficial. So how do I actually genuinely feel compassion for others' difficulties? At the same time, I increase the conviction of whatever reversals I am going through, that's what I deserve.
If we follow the prayers of the unborn child, the second point that you say will come automatically through. And that is that if we genuinely have gratitude to Krishna and accept that all these material things that are given to us is actually His grace, then the conviction to use them in Krishna's service becomes very easy. The moment we start thinking that whatever I offer is to Krishna because Krishna doesn't have it, then we have a problem. You know, sometimes when we offer our deities, we offer nice offerings, the idea at the head is, Krishna, you please take it. And the reason for that is because you don't have it. You haven't tasted such nice prasadam as I'm going to offer you. Now have nice bhoga and make it prasadam. If I say, Krishna, I have $100,000 in the bank, you know, I'm going to give it to you now. The idea is that it is a self-centered ego acting actually. But we forget that the mood should be, Krishna, $100,000 in the bank you have put. Actually you have to, because it belongs to you, doesn't belong to me. It's like as what Advaita Acharya chanted to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, Lord, I'm taking Mother Ganges and I'm pouring her back to you. But actually the truth is Mother Ganges is coming from you. But I have nothing to give you, so I'm just taking from you and giving it back to you. That is my lowly position. You please accept it. When you all were young and you, I don't know about you all, when my mother had her birthday, right, what my father would do is, he would take money from mother's purse and he would give it to us and tell us to go and buy chocolate for her. So we'd buy chocolate and give it to her. Of course, being 5 years old, we had no money to buy. But the act of giving her the chocolate, bought from her money, was very pleasing to her. Because we were just innocent as children and very lovingly we gave back to her. We didn't think anything. So in the same way, if we make use of Krishna's resources and we give it back to Krishna, then we become peaceful. We don't become agitated. The first part of your question is the point of compassion. Prabhupada writes that one may not be immediately compassionate to a living entity, but he can empathize. He can empathize. Empathize means I can understand something that you are going through, but I cannot feel it. But based on my understanding, I am trying my best to serve you. That is genuinely considered more difficult than someone who knows or who can feel you understand your difficulty and then help you. What's the fun in that? The fun, actually, if I may use the word, is actually when you cannot feel the when you cannot feel the suffering of a person, but you empathize because you have enough intelligence to know that every living entity is genuinely suffering. I may not be able to feel his suffering, but that doesn't mean that I cannot be of service to him. When one adopts that mood, then one becomes a real instrument to ease the suffering of that person. It is true, Prabhu, because only the spirit soul, the super soul, can understand each and every living entity. We are hampered. But with nice sadhana, with nice proper forming of Bhagavatam, Shastras tell us that we will be able to become genuinely compassionate. And compassion doesn't mean I cry with you. The idea normally is if someone is crying, Prabhu, come, my shoulder is here, I'm going to cry on your shoulder. No. The compassion actually is in sitting down with him or her, speaking from Shastras, being there to hear the problems and trying to share how from understanding Shastras I can help you or I can serve you. Not in a very guru mood, because when someone is very upset, they don't want to come and say, oh, I'm crying, I'm very upset. Okay, very simple. 12:15, 25 you read, 8:15, 1 you read, finish. What are you crying for? Please don't do that. Right? That is not empathy. You know, that is being chastising. But except for Guru, no one in this world should use the word chastise. Because only He can chastise us. So, I believe, Prabhuji, knowing you, I cannot believe that you are not in a position to empathize. I've had personal dealings with you, and I found you very compassionate by nature. So, you may bring this up for the benefit of the congregation, but I believe that you have actually been an example of that yourself. Does that answer the question? Not the last part, but the rest of it. Prabhu, one last. You were going to say something, Prabhu?
This question could take a whole class kind of, I had like no kind of confusion, and it has been carrying on with me since I was in India, so here, it's a long journey. So And I found many people from different congregations. They have a different idea of following of devotional services.
When you say different congregation, you mean as in different denominations or within Krishna consciousness?
Mm-hmm. Outside also Krishna consciousness.
Okay. Yes.
Okay. So, and particularly, like, I would just like to ask about deity worship.
Yes.
So, few people say that deities are man-made.
Mm. Yeah.
I think it must clarify my question itself. So, deities are man-made. Krishna has made human beings. All of us.
Yes.
So we should be loving to each other, we should help each other and spend most of the time in helping each other and serving each other. And Krishna also, if I say that, as not putting as a deity, but as some supreme power.
Mm.
So as the other people say like this.
Yes.
And because as we have learned that it's a process that any religion can follow, right? And but some religions say that they go against the deity worship also.
Yes.
So how the other people can be given the answer for this kind of question, and for us also, everyone?
I can give you a 3-line, 4-line answer for you. Right. That's okay. Given in the light of the time and circumstances that we are in, it is best not to discuss about other religions. But we can say this point, Prabhu, your point is very true. This is exactly what the purport is speaking about. The idea of most of material existence is situated in an impersonal aspect of Krishna. Most of the living entities prefer to believe that God is impersonal. Because by being impersonal, there is always more leeway for you to perform your actions the way you want to. There is no one in that sense to answer to. That is the basic of the basic understanding of why impersonalism is very famous. The other reason also is, the impersonalist cannot accept the form of God because he says it is man-made. That is another famous argument that's always been put forward. But for us, Jai Jagannath, Ole Shukra Maiti. But for us, Prabhuji, Shastras tell us very simply that Krishna has the capacity to actually make any form of his transcendental in any part of existence. If he appears in person, as exactly this purport said, he doesn't have a circulatory system, respiratory system, kidneys and all. His body is completely spiritual. And when he appears in the form of Daru Brahma, which is Jagannath Baladev Subramanian, when he appears in this wonderful form, then he has invested all his energy as he is in Goloka, in this wonderful form. But the form must be authorized. It must not be anything that I carve out of wood and then that becomes a deity. That is an idol. That's why Prabhupada said, if a postman, if you want to post a letter, you post it in the post box which is linked to Singapore Post. Of course, Prabhupada gave you Singapore Post. But if you make your own letterbox at home and you post it there, where is the post, where is the letter going to go? It's not going to go anywhere. So, we are always careful to regard deity worship, which is bona fide, as being the true standard of relating with the Lord. The impersonalist cannot accept this point because for him, clouded by the curtain of the deluding energy of the Lord, he cannot see and cannot accept with faith that Krishna is different from all of us, that he has the capacity to invest his energy in any form of material nature. For us, the strongest argument is that material nature is coming from him, though. He has the right to be able to spiritualize any aspect of nature if he so wishes. It is his prerogative. Just like an architect of the building can change the plans of a building anytime, because it is his right. The engineer of the building can move the fire exits in a building at his own sweet will if he wants. Krishna can invest his energy in his names, in his form, in his activities. So, as Krishna conscious devotees, we don't do deity worship to the exclusion of serving devotees. We don't serve devotees to the exclusion of deity worship. For many critics who say, why waste so much time?
time and energy and ghee and water and milk on ladies when you can feed the poor, we tell them, you can't feed the poor 24 hours a day yourself. You might, the truth of the matter is, man is an animal who requires different kinds of activities to keep him going. No one can chant 24 hours, no one can eat 24 hours. When you chant for two, when you finish your 16 rounds, you have the option of daily worship. You have the option of food distribution. You have the option of book distribution. You have the option of preaching, of Naam Sankirtan, of Vani Pedia, of Prasadam distribution. The variety in devotional service is what makes a devotee always enthused, and an impersonalist very dry. Because the impersonalist has nothing to do. How long can he sit and meditate on the void? Chances are he'll sleep. I told you, I may have given this example. My uncle is a great practitioner of yoga, and always he will sit and tell me how for 2 hours he will meditate on the light. But his grandchildren will come behind and say, you know what, grandfather was sleeping for 2 hours. He was snoring like anything. It is an embarrassment. Because the truth is, nobody in this world in Kali Yuga can sustain that. And the best logic I can offer you is what Prabhupada gave when someone asked him this question. Why is personalism more important than impersonalism? He said, one is a fool who thinks that the sun rays are more important than the sun. Because it is the sun that has given the sun rays and not the other way around. I think I'll stop there. Thank you, Guru. Now we will just sing Sweet Kirtan for the pleasure of your lordships. And for those of us who have to go for our meeting, I think we should start moving. Right? Okay, they can have quick prasadam, otherwise they should forego. Never mind, we'll have some prasadam and we go. Jai Jagannath Balade Subhadramaya Ki!
Jai Shri Prabhupada Ki! Jai Shri Gurudev Ki!
Jai! Ananta Kodi Vaishnavinda Ki!